This is Sacrilegious with your host, Gary Latterman.
We're back again. Welcome to the next episode of Sacrilegious. I'm happy that you're here and that you hopefully have listened to the first episode and are caught up. Not that there's much that you missed. I think that first episode really just tried to establish the why of Sacrilegious and sort of what I'm hoping out of the box with this podcast on religion, so-called religion. So today, in this episode, I was thinking about maybe spending some time thinking about the what. And that, of course, is a fun conversation to have, or monologue, in the sense that just thinking and discussing and exploring the definition of religion and what people mean by that word is quite fascinating and challenging. So again, I'm glad you are listening and that you haven't turned me off. So I'm hoping that you'll continue to keep me turned on, so to speak. What is religion? What do we mean by that term? It's for someone who teaches religion, it's predictable, but it's the first thing I go after in class with students. I just try to get them to begin to first think about their own definition of religion, not what do they believe or what is their faith. You know, it's more about, can you step back and give some kind of not hardcore scientific operational definition, but, you know, think about what do you mean when you use that term? How do you understand that concept? Can you put that into words? So that's the first thing. And then the second thing that we do, you know, in class together is spend some time going through and hearing what students have to say in terms of their definition of religion. And what we get every time, you know, every time for the last, 25 years of teaching religion, we get to the same point, the same bottom line, the same unavoidable endpoint when you bring up this question. And that is, there is no consensus. We don't agree. People have all kinds of definitions. And so that's, to me, a great, exciting, and challenging starting point for me, for sure, as a teacher, but also definitely, I hope, for students to really kind of sort of disorient them a bit and realize even from the get-go, a class on religion can be about a whole number of different topics and items. And that when we think about how we talk about religion, and then, you know, particularly how people have studied religion, you know, you really get quite disoriented and see, in a sense, the sort of arbitrariness of the term religion. And that too is great for me as a teacher wanting to get people to rethink and reconsider what they mean by that term. So that, you know, maybe is not surprising, and hopefully right now, if you're listening, you're beginning to wonder and think about, and maybe why don't you, I'll give you a homework assignment. No, I won't do that. But, you know, try to write down, like, how do you define religion? What are the main talking points, if you will? One thing for sure is, you might guess, over the course of a long time teaching religion, that there are definitely trends over that time, even in my classes at Emory, where things are pretty telling when I go through this exercise with students. And one of the more glaring, and I imagine obvious for some of you, trends over the last, whatever, decade or so, couple decades, is how fewer and fewer students reference God in their definitions. You know, one thing that's clear is students, when confronted with this question, are no longer, going back to using God as a touchstone in how they would define religion. Students now are thinking more about spirituality or spirit, or are clued into things like ritual and meaning and way of life, so they're in many ways coming in more open-minded, and I think not so firmly stuck on these older models for thinking about religion and what counts as religion. So that's part of the current landscape is worth considering as well, when we think about definitions of religion and how things have changed and what contemporary society seems to be thinking about religion. As you may know, as I hope you know, or as I hope you will go and investigate after this, it's interesting to look at the surveys of American religion and how people identify themselves and how that has changed, right? So we're living in a time in which really, for many of us who study religion, the name of the game and the place where all the action is are with the nuns. That is to say, not N-U-N-S, but the nuns as in N-O-N-E-S. Those Americans who choose not to identify or affiliate with any one particular religion. So when they're asked on surveys, what is your religion? They check the nun box. That percentage is now significant, close to a quarter, 25% of the American population in recent surveys. Who knows how the pandemic is going to change that? And that I imagine will be something we'll be talking about in a future episode. For now, the point is we're really living in a dynamic, exciting, and fascinating moment in American religious history, a sort of time in which the general constraints and control of Christianity and Christian ways of thinking about religion are diminishing quite a bit. And people are moving away from institutions as, again, touchstones for their religious life and identity. It's a much more it's much more of a free for all, in a sense, a kind of wide open cultural. I won't use the term marketplace, but just a diverse and thriving sort of multicultural religious moment and sensibility that has become so strong in our consciousness, thinking about religion. Today, we're much more, many of us, interested in exploring different avenues of spiritual life and religious life, people willing to kind of move out of traditional surroundings and explore. And experiment and question. And sometimes, that leads to the return. You go back to the church. You have a redefined understanding of God. But I think still the point is religion is not what we think it is. And all of those nuns, I would add, are not simply atheists. I think we have to do much more research and kind of exploring how the nuns and people within that segment of the population understand religion, and if they actually may have other kinds of religious commitments that are sort of anchoring and significant, again, outside of institutions and maybe not necessarily connected to the familiar sacred scriptures, but again, other kinds of sacred anchors, sacred commitments, And that too, I want to get to over time, because I think those are much more a diverse and vast in the array of different kinds of sacred commitments and investments and anchors today than really, you know, I think at any other time in American history. Although once we start reconsidering the definition of religion and raising the possibility that people are religious in multiple various ways, that can't be reduced to simply, you know, one particular identity of a Buddhist or of a Muslim or of a Jew or of a Protestant, but again, find other avenues for religious expression and experience and community. But again, I don't want to move too far away from the question of the definition of religion. How do we define it? What is it? How has it been, if I may, deployed over time? And that's in itself an interesting and long history that I won't try to cover right now. But one point to make for sure is that the word religion does not exist in every language. It's not a universal term. It has a very distinctive history, as I'm saying. And really, the short version is sort of the roots of the term are tied to the Latin phrase or term word religio, something that generally referred to how people revere the gods, how people are devoted to their gods, how they express their devotion to the gods. So it's very much tied to an ancient sort of Greco-Roman world. And then over time, it certainly is brought into Western Christianity as Christianity moves from the margins to the position of power and dominance, you know, by the early Middle Ages and then beyond. Religion becomes part of the Christian imaginative universe in the sense that religion really refers to one religion, the right religion, Christianity. So there's really only one religion, and that means the other religions around the Christians weren't true religion. They were, as you know, obviously often identified with paganism, heathenism. Of course, the Jews and the Muslims were particularly problematic monotheistic religious cultures. But again, Christianity really established that association. Religion, for most of and much of Western history, means Christianity. That changes, of course, in time. And as people begin to move away from that position of sort of judging other religions, other kinds of cultural expressions, to, you know, growing curiosity about religions outside of Christianity, throughout much of Christian history up until the 18th or so century, the only interest that Christians had really in other religions was not so much to study them and compare religions for scholarly intellectual purposes, but to have a better grasp on who they were up against, a better grasp of who the enemies were, in most cases, but also as a means to theologically prove and identify that Christianity is the pinnacle of religious expression and the true form of religious expression. That, as I said, really begins to change during the Enlightenment, obviously with the rise of science, new ways of thinking, and new forms of authority in society that aren't so tied necessarily to any one particular church or denomination. So obviously the split between Protestants and Catholics is an interesting moment in how people start to use the term religion. And when the Protestants start to argue that, no, the Catholics aren't living by the one true religion, but they actually have been corrupted by the devil, and so on. So the religion, the term religion, is just loaded with baggage, with political baggage. Again, that's in many ways all about power and differentiation, as well as many other things that are going on. But really, from my point of view, things really begin to change and get interesting with, in a sense, the rise of the social sciences in Western culture. And in particular, one of my favorite pivot points when I talk about this in general with students in class is the impact, not of Christians, but of atheist Jews in how people think about religion and identify religion and study religion. So really, three critical atheist Jews who really kind of turned the religion world upside down. Some of you may know who those three are, but they're easy to identify, right? So they're all really they're late 19th, early 20th century figures. One would be, of course, Sigmund Freud and his psychoanalytical approach to religion, which, to put it kindly, was really not very favorable about religion. He really identified religion with kind of sort of the childhood of humanity. We need to grow out of that and become more realistic and kind of science-minded. But for him, yeah, you know, religion was a neurosis. It's all tied back to, you know, your relationship with your mom and dad, and that gets pretty complicated, but is always fun to talk about and study. So I'm sure we'll end up at another point in time exploring some of Freud's theories about religion. So Freud would be one. The other would be Emile Durkheim, who is considered the father of sociology to many people, a French Jew who wrote The Elementary Forms of Religious Life, you know, probably the most important book in my life in terms of my professional career. For him, yeah, religion, you know, was all about society. You can understand religion if you understand social dynamics. God is society in some ways. So he was not as negative, I would say, as Freud, much more open to the integral placement of religion in human societies. You can't get around it. And we will definitely be coming back to Durkheim. The last one then would be Karl Marx, of course, and thinking about one of everyone's favorite phrases, right? Religion is the opium of the masses, or, you know, something along those lines. Yeah, so here too is another atheist Jew that's like, religion, man, that's just not going to do it. You know, if you want political freedom and liberation, well, you got to move beyond religion. You got to, really unite and turn society upside down. Religion is really all about economic class and interests. And so it's very complicated, but tied into these kinds of economic forces that maybe for many of you wouldn't necessarily play a role in people's religious identity and communities. But again, worth a study and something I imagine we're going to be coming back to, no doubt. But so that's a pivot point, and really all of a sudden, but generally you begin to see a different approach to studying religion, a different ways to talking about religious forces in human development and social development. And it undercuts, in many ways, the sort of predominant Christian frames of reference. And as I like to say, rules of the game when talking about religion, they really upset that dominance and begin to question the central role of God as a primary sort of determining force, but that, you know, is in fact a symptom of other kinds of more material, social, human, existential realities that we struggle with in various ways. So, you know, and then from there, things really, what can I say, become more academic. You see the influence of certain thinkers from anthropology, like Clifford Geertz and Mary Douglas. You begin to see, a variety of different historical approaches that, again, start to question and challenge how we identify religion and where we see it in society. Certainly, as we begin to see more feminist approaches to religion, thinking about getting beyond the patriarchy and all of these male frames of reference, and then, you know, you begin to see a radically different picture. The same thing with African-American history and cultures. When you start to think about religion in those contexts of sort of the more marginalized, disempowered, sort of non-Anglo, non-white cultural setting, you also encounter a very different sensibility, religious sensibility, than what has so predominated in the American educational system and the media. Religion is not simply about faith and, you know, prayer and your relationship to Jesus or the Bible. You begin to have to encounter other ways of thinking about divine powers, other ways of understanding our relationship with death and the dead. Have to rethink how we understand immorality and conceptions of right and wrong when you're in a different cultural cosmology. So that's, you know, that's part of, at least in the more academic side, how religion, I think, has really been kind of destabilized and is no longer in the grips of a more Protestant Christian sensibility or framework. Religion is up for grabs, and thinking about our culture today, you don't simply need to turn to the minister or the rabbi or the usual sacred landmarks. Instead, you've got the internet and social media, popular culture, as I've mentioned, other topics that we're going to get into. But the definition of religion, to get back to that central question, is very difficult to pinpoint. And again, I think impossible for all of us to come into some kind of agreement. My own approach really is not to think that there's some kind of essence or substance that's central in religion. Right, I mean, that would sort of go against the whole etymology we sort of just glanced at, that there's, you know, there's really a way in which religion is tied to certain kinds of behaviors, certain sensibilities and sensitivities. In Geertz's words, Clifford Geertz, the anthropologist, it's tied to moods and motivations, symbol systems. So for me, you know, it's not about some central essence. It's about how certain behaviors and certain phenomena and certain ways of seeing the world help individuals cope with and understand their surroundings and their journey through life. So there are some sort of common elements that I think help to allow us to focus in and zero in on certain kinds of behaviors and certain forms of expressions, things tied to notions of transcendence, of extraordinary experiences, of really some form of kind of spiritual liberation. Things that are tied as well to community and ritual activity that help to orient and order the world, provide some sense of stability in recurring patterns of behaviors and certain kinds of identifications, can also be tied, obviously, to those questions of right and wrong, sort of moral development. How do I know what's right? How do I know how to act in the world? And then, you know, the more existential questions that are all about religion, all about our struggle with and desire for sacred realities, right? Things about purpose and about meaning. And certainly the biggie, the one that I think started it all, when we start talking about the religious imagination or religious sensibilities. And that, of course, is the reality of death and the question of, is there life after death? Does consciousness in some form survive? If so, then, you know, we are certainly in religious territory. If not, I would say we're still in religious territory. So you know, I'm one of those people that see the possibility of religious life and sacred perceptions and realities as you know, possible in any social context. But so much depends on the historical and cultural circumstances. And to get back to America in the 21st century, our cultural and historical circumstances, again, up until the pandemic, how the pandemic changes things, you know, we don't know. We're living through them, but that, I think, will come to us more in time. But pre-pandemic, you know, we in American society are clearly in a moment of great possibility, where religious life and sacred attachments are not tied to any particular form of institutional authority, but that are really free-flowing and malleable and mixable in ways, again, that allow, I think, for all kinds of creative and perhaps unconscious forms of religious life and experience that can really speak to something unique in our cultural moment, and that can speak to how older conventional forms of religion are losing sway and dying off, or in the death throes of dying off, and trying to find ways to exert their diminishing authority. So the playing field is much more wide open, and religious life can take on so many different forms and possibilities that I think we'll have a lot to talk about in the weeks ahead. And so I think for now I'm going to sign off. Hopefully I've given you some things to ponder and mull over until the next time. I appreciate your listening, and I am looking forward to the next episode. I'm not sure exactly what direction we're going to go in, but I will try to keep it interesting and lively and hopefully provocative in some ways. So that's enough for today. Thanks.